Hey everybody, how's it going? Today is the second installment of Focus, the Hidden Driver of Excellence by Daniel Goleman. I'm going to read from the book today. My name is Kyle McCaffrey and I am a hardstyle kettlebell instructor. I'm living in Spain, believe it or not. This podcast is designed to give you bite-sized nuggets of wisdom to take into your life. I created Hero Bells because I wanted to improve and lead others to improve their lives also. To be the hero of their own making, if you will, as corny as that sounds. So we're going to get into it right away, seeing as this is the second installment, carrying on from what we read before, or what I read before. The last paragraph read as this: when our mind wanders off, our brain activates a host of brain circuits that chatter about things that have nothing to do with what we're trying to learn. Lacking focus, we store no crisp memory of what we're learning. So that was the last paragraph. If you haven't listened to the last podcast about this, you should go and listen to that now. That is episode 15. Yeah, 15. So we're on episode 16. A reader's mind typically wanders anywhere from 20 to 40% of the time while perusing a text. The cost for students, not surprisingly, is that the more wandering, the worse their comprehension. Even when our minds are not wandering, if the text turns into gibberish, we must make some circus for the money instead of we must make some money for the circus. I've never heard that expression before. That sounds really dumb. But anyway, this guy's smarter than me, so let's just assume that he's got better expressions than I do. Back to the book. About 30% of the time, readers continue reading along for a significant stretch, an average of 17 words, before catching it. As we read a book, a blog, or any narrative, our mind constructs a mental model that lets us make sense of what we're reading and connects it to the universe of such models we already hold that bear the same topic. That's a long-winded way of saying that we attach things that we're learning to things we already know. This expanding web of understanding lies at the heart of learning. The more we zone out while building that web, and the sooner the lapse after we begin reading, the more holes. When we read a book, our brain constructs a network of pathways that embodies that set of ideas and experiences. Contrast that deep comprehension with the interruptions and distractions that typify the ever-seductive internet. The bombardment of text, videos, and images and miscellaneous of messages we get online seems the enemy of the more full understanding that comes with what Nicholas Carr calls deep reading, which requires sustained concentration and immersion in a topic rather than hopscotching from one to another, nabbing disconnected factoids. I do this all the time. I don't know if anybody else does, but I assume that most of the problems I have are actually pretty common. Back to the book. As education migrates onto web-based formats, the danger looms that the multimedia massive distractions we call the internet will hamper learning. Way back in the 1950s, the philosopher Martin Heidegger warned against a looming tide of technological revolution that might, quote, so captivate, bewitch, dazzle, and beguile man that calculative thinking may someday come to be the only way of thinking, end quote. That would come at the loss of meditative thinking, a mode of reflection he saw as the essence of humanity. I hear Heidegger's warning in terms of the erosion of an ability at the core of reflection, the capacity to sustain attention to an ongoing narrative. Deep thinking demands sustaining a focused mind. The more distracted we are, the more shallow our reflections. Likewise, the shorter our reflections, the more trivial they are likely to be. Heidegger, were he alive today, would be horrified if asked to tweet. I still haven't figured out why in the hell someone would want to go on Twitter and expect any depth at all or a discourse beyond selling, like selling ideas, which it seems to be rife with ideology, products, people, experiences, and of course we sell ourselves. If you followed me on Instagram, you would know all about selling yourself. You've probably seen videos of me without a shirt on. That's me selling myself. I mean, this isn't a mystery. So back to the book. Has attention shrunk? there's a swing band from Shanghai playing lounge music in a crowded Swiss convention hall with hundreds of people milling about. In the midst of the manic throng, standing still at a small circular bar table, Clay Shirky has zoned into his laptop and is typing furiously. I met Clay, a New York University-based social media maven, some years back, but rarely have had the chance to see him in the flesh. For several minutes, I'm standing about 3 feet away from Clay, off to his right, watching him, positioned in his peripheral vision, if he had any attention bandwidth to spare. But Clay takes no notice until I speak his name. Then, startled, he looks up and we started chatting. Attention is a limited capacity. Clay's rapt concentration fills that full bore until he shifts to me. Quote, 7 plus or minus 2, end quote. Chunks of information has been taken as the upper limit of the beam of attention since the 1950s, when George Miller proposed what he called this, quote, magical number, end quote, in one of psychology's most influential papers. Now, it's a really weird way of putting that Daniel Goleman has written to start off a sentence. But anyway, basically what he's saying here is that our cognitive capacity to remember or concentrate on information is about 7 chunks, plus or minus 2. Back to the book. More recently, though, some cognitive scientists have argued that 4 chunks is the upper limit. That caught the public's limited attention, for a brief moment anyway, as the new meme spread that this mental capacity had shrunk from 7 to 4 bits of information. Quote, mind's limit found, 4 bits of information, end quote, one science news site proclaimed. Some took the presumed downsizing of what we can hold in mind as an indictment of the distractedness of everyday life in the 21st century, decrying the shrinking of the crucial mental ability, but they misinterpret the data. Working memory hasn't shrunk, said Justin Halberta, who is a cognitive scientist at Johns Hopkins University. I guess that's two different people. I know nothing about Johns Hopkins University. Quote, it's not the case that TV has made our working memory smaller, and that in the 1950s, we all had an upper limit of 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information, and now we only have 4. Quote, the mind tries to make the most of its limited resources, end quote, Halberta explained. So we must use memory strategies that help. For instance, combining different elements like 4, 1, and 5 into a single chunk, such as the area code 415. Quote, when we perform a memory task, the result might be 7 plus or minus 2 bits, but that breaks down into a fixed limit of 4 plus 3 or 4 more that memory strategies add. That was a really wonky way of saying things. Anyways, back to the book and the quote. So both 4 and 7 are right, depending on how you measure it. Obviously, everyone's got a way of interpreting data and statistics. No one really likes statistics except for people who are really interested in science. The person who brings up statistics at the party is typically the pariah, or a pariah, because someone will typically bring something like that up as with a lack of nuance and only to buttress their opinion and their ideology. But that's my opinion, and that's what I've noticed at parties. I've made that mistake myself. And oftentimes I'm very misinformed. But anyway. And then there might be what many people think of as splitting attention in multitasking, which cognitive science tells us is a fiction too. Rather than having a stretchable balloon of attention to deploy in tandem, we have a narrow, fixed pipeline to a lot. Instead of splitting it, we actually switch rapidly. I've heard this before somewhere, but anyway, continually switching saps attention from full concentrated engagement. Continual switching saps attention from full concentrated engagement. That is one sentence. My bad. Back to the book. Quote, the most precious resource in a computer system is no longer its processor, memory, disk, or network, but rather human attention, end quote. A research group at Carnegie Mellon University notes, the solution they propose to this human bottleneck hinges on minimizing distractions. Project Aura proposes to do away with bothersome systems glitches so we don't waste time in hassles. The goal of a hassle-free computing system is laudable. This solution, however, may not get us that far. It's not a technological fix we need, but a cognitive one. Now, just a little side note here. That's something that I actually really think is important to highlight, because I think if you follow, maybe Nietzsche. Is that how you say it? I don't know. Anyway, if you follow anything like that and you understand atheism and religion in just a very, very basic sense like I do, you would understand that the religion has sort of fallen by the wayside in order and what I mean by that is it's no longer offering the framework of our morality and ethics. And what we've done in its absence is asking technology to fill that void. And I don't think it does in terms of answering certain questions, like big questions. And I think a lot of the answers that we're looking for are, at least for our humanity, are within. Our transcendence is likely to be, at least from what it sounds like, to be spiritual, unless we integrate with our creations, which are machines. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's progress, because we don't know. We've never been there before, and that's likely to be the new frontier. That's my opinion. But anyway, back to the book. The source of distractions is not so much in the technology we use as in the frontal assault on our focusing ability from the mounting tide of distractions. Which gets me back to Clay Shirky, particularly his research on social media. While none of us can focus on everything at once, all of us together create a collective bandwidth for attention that we can access as needed. He says, witness Wikipedia. As Shirky proclaims in his book, Here Comes Everybody, attention can be seen as a capacity distributed among many people, as can memory or any cognitive expertise. Quote, what's trending now, end quote, indexes how we are allotting our collective attention. A good example would be things like hot button topics, abortion, global warming, Trump. Fuck, I hate that topic. Anyway. While some argue that our tech-facilitated learning and memory dumb us down, there's also a case to be made that they create mental prosthesis that expands the power of individual attention. For instance, remembering phone numbers. I don't have to remember my phone numbers, and therefore the idea is that because you don't have to remember these things that could be seemingly trivial, you open up the possibility to think about other things that are bigger and deeper. That's possible, but I also don't like not being able to remember something. I know that I've outsourced my memory, and I feel like I've actually gotten a little bit dumber in some ways. And the reason for that is I've used it so much as a utility that I just don't think that my memory has really suffered as a result. I haven't really fully embraced social media because I really do think it is a double-edged sword. And I don't know how to navigate it as well as other people do. Not to say that you can't navigate it really well. I'm just not good at it. And there's obviously people who are. Okay. Our social capital and range of attention increases as we up the number of social ties through which we gain crucial information, like tacit knowledge of, quote, how things work here, end quote, whether in an organization or a new neighborhood. Casual acquaintances can be extra sets of eyes and ears on the world, key sources of the guidance we need to operate in social complex social and information ecosystems. Most of us have a handful of strong ties, close, trusted friends, but we can have hundreds of so-called weak ties. For example, our Facebook friends. Weak ties have high value as multipliers of our attention capacity and as a source of tips for good shopping deals, job possibilities, and dating partners. When we coordinate what we see and what we know, our efforts in tandem multiply our cognitive wealth. It's a pretty interesting argument. While at any given moment our quota for working memory remains small, the total of data we can pull through that narrow width becomes huge. This collective intelligence, the sum total of what everyone in a distributed group can contribute, promises maximal focus, the summation of what multiple eyes can notice, which is pretty interesting. I've often thought that the internet is this collective thing and also a reflection of us and a lens. It's a really weird thing because it shows exactly what we are and who we are and how we view the world. And we're actually able to see things that we've never been able to see about ourselves. And as much as we are in turmoil right now, I think if we were having a collective thought, we would be thinking, holy shit, we are fucking ugly. And yet there's a beauty to us at the same time. But anyway, a research center at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology on Collective Intelligence sees this emerging capacity as abetted by the sharing of attention on the internet. The classic example, millions of websites cast their spotlight within narrow niches, and a web search selects and directs our focus so we can harvest all that cognitive work efficiently. The MIT group's basic question, how can we connect people and computers so that collectively we act with more intelligence than any one person or group? Or as the Japanese say, all of us are smarter than any one of us. And that was the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope I didn't read too fast. If you like this podcast or you don't like this podcast, I have to know. You got to tell me. So far, my numbers are pretty low of people who are listening, and I would like them to get up higher, and I want to improve this a lot, but I am just really thinking about this all on my own, and I don't have the ability to focus on this all on my own. I do need that extra help, that feedback from people to be able to improve this website, this podcast, and make it, well, at least maybe triple, quadruple, or 10 times my listeners. That'd be really, really nice. And I would really appreciate your help. So if you are on Instagram, keep following me on Instagram or follow me on Instagram. You can follow me on YouTube. You can follow me here on Anchor or Apple Podcasts, Facebook. I'm just about in, oh, and I'm on LinkedIn also, where I also share these podcasts. So please help me improve this. If you find any way possible, whether you're listening to on Apple Podcasts, find me on Facebook or any of the previously mentioned social media sites and comment, message me. I love it. I don't even care if you don't like it or you hate it or you think I'm an idiot. Tell me and tell me why. Don't just be a dick. No one needs more dicks around. There's just miles of dick everywhere. That's a weird way to end a podcast. But anyways, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned next week for the third installment of Focus, the Hidden Driver of Excellence. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful day.